Hey everyone. Everyone's ready for some learning about some sustainable open source development? Oh, what? What? Okay, cool. So I'm going to be talking today about Human Essentials, and that's how you can find it on GitHub. A little bit about some of the best practices we've done, and hopefully have a little bit of a discussion at the end. Try to save a little time in the talk. Hi, I'm Sean Marcia. I'm a software engineer on GitHub's social impact team. I'm also part of Ruby for Good. I love baking. I'm a Zimmergist. I'll let you Google that. And I'm from the Washington, D.C. area, so if any of you are planning on coming to Washington, D.C. or you're from there, reach out. I'd love to take you out for a coffee or tea or whatever your beverage of choice is. Well, I guess everyone found out I was speaking because they're all rushing in. And I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to be talking about the Human Essentials app. It's a couple fun things. We are a digital public good. Woohoo! Got our certification last year. We won the 2022 Pizzagatti Prize from N10. And so audience participation. Who's familiar with the concept of an essentials bank? Okay, there's one person, a coworker of mine. So essentials banks, that's actually not why she's familiar, but essentials banks are things like diaper banks, peer supply banks, adult incontinence banks. They operate on the same concept of like a food bank, where they don't give food directly to the public, they give it to organizations that give it to the public. So like a diaper bank collects diapers and things like that, and gives it to like homeless shelters, women's shelters, like high school programs, things like that that are distributing directly to the public. And these are the organizations that Human Essentials software serves. And just a couple of quick facts about diaper banks in the US is just last year, 40% of the families in the United States relied on or had diaper need. And like, the last time they did the survey was in 2010, and it was 33% of the families, so things are maybe getting a little bit worse. And of those families suffering from diaper need, 25% of them had to miss work because of that. And the reason why like they miss work is you can't put your kid into daycare unless you have diapers for the kid. And if you don't have diapers, you can't put them in daycare. Well, then you can't go to work, and then you don't have money, and you have less money, and it's this vicious negative feedback loop. And the same thing too, like 28% of these families often had to choose between buying food for their kids or diapers. And just, it's not a good situation for families in this situation. And so like our software, some facts about it. Now we have over 240 banks across the United States and some in Canada now registered using it. And like I said, they're on the partner system. And so we have about 5,000 community partners. Our project started in 2015. And it's now helping over 3 million kids a year and over 500,000 period supply recipients. We've had over 300 contributors on GitHub, which is pretty cool. We're endorsed by the National Diaper Bank Network and the Alliance for Period Supplies. These are the two big national networks in the United States. We're a digital public good, like I said, which we're super stoked about. And we're 100% volunteer driven. Like, we've never had a paid person, and we don't charge anything to all the diaper banks and peer supply banks using the software. So yeah, like, are we a unicorn? Like, how did we do this? Like, how did we get here? And so kind of first, like, background before we kind of get into that, some background information, basic kind of things, is like, we have like a team etiquette, which really is three things. It's to be patient with people, be helpful, and be kind. Like, we really believe that it's much better to be kind than to be right. And so kindness really matters, and like that is our ethos with our teams and our contributors, which I think is why we have so many people. And also like just kind of like some basic stats too, we have a README in GitHub, we have a contributing guide, like all the little things to make it easy for someone to come to the project and just get started. And importantly, we have a code of conduct. Just like they said, there's a FOSDEM code of conduct. A lot of people don't realize that if a project doesn't have a code of conduct, some companies are actually prohibit their employees from contributing to those projects. So if you have one of these projects, make sure you have a code of conduct, and it's the right thing to do. And you know, I think we highlight this in our contributing guide. Like, you know, we start off like, hey, code of conduct is important. But then, like, if you see this, like, hey, if you're unsure of anything, just submit a pull request or an issue and just ask. No one's going to yell at you. We're not one of those evil open source projects. Because, you know, open source can be intimidating for people for the first time. And so, you know, we just say, hey, give it your best effort, and we're going to make this a welcoming place for you. And GitHub also makes this really easy for projects. Like, if you've ever been on the Insights tab and the Community Standards, like, it lets you know if you have all these things. And if you've never been in the Insights tab, like, I'd say go check it out today, especially if you're data-driven, because there's a lot of really good information just about, like, the cadence of your project and just what's happening. And, yeah, it'll really, yeah, give you some insights that you may not be aware of. And like another kind of background thing is it's important to know who is contributing to your project and why they're contributing. And you know, like, we've had over 300 contributors to our project, and like, and we've tried to talk to them and understand why they come and contribute. And we found that it's really for four reasons. Like the first reason is like, they want real world experience working in software. You know, like, they can build to-do apps or they can build things, but like, there's no replacement for, you know, like, your resume, or if you want to show, like, highlight work, than a real project. You know, because maybe they're coming from like C++ or Rust or some other language, and they want real world, you know, Ruby on Rails experience. And so, like, this gives it to them. Some people are here because, you know, just like everyone at FOSDEM, they believe in open source software and they want to contribute to open source software. Some people are here because they believe in the mission, and like perhaps they benefited from a diaper bank at some point, or they have a family that has, or a friend, and they want to contribute for that reason. And the final reason is people just want to be part of a community. Like, they want a group of friends, because, you know, we are all friends on the kind of the maintainer team. We get together on a regular cadence. We chat in Zoom. And so, you know, they want to be friends with like-minded people. And I think these are the best people around. And on the other side of that is, like, what's important for a maintainer of a project like this? And, like, for us, a maintainer is someone who doesn't write code. A maintainer is someone who makes it easy for other people to contribute and to write code and to, you know, write assets and to manage a project. Like, our general belief is a maintainer should be writing code 10 to 20% of the time, and the other 80 to 90% of the time, they should be facilitating everyone else being successful. Because, you know, rather than just being one person, they can be a force multiplier for a lot of people. And then the last kind of bit of background information is, you know, it's important to understand the type of project it is too. Like, this is a, like, Human Essentials is a SaaS. It's not a library. Like, when you're maintaining a library, there's a lot of things to think about, like backward compatibility and, like, does it run on all the different versions of the language, all the different frameworks. But we're a SaaS. Like, the number one thing we have to be concerned about is user data, because, you know, we're dealing with such, like, vulnerable populations. So we have to keep that data safe, and so that that guides all our decisions. Okay, now that we've got the background out of the way, like, what works? And again, this is what works for us, and so your mileage may vary. So the biggest thing that I think that works for us is the human impact. Like, there are a lot of amazing open source projects out there. Like, talking to bunch of them just in the hall before I came in here earlier. Like there is a lot, but these type of projects, like, you know, these digital public goods, like, we have something that all these other open source projects don't have, is we have, like, the human angle, the human impact that no one else can, like, those other projects can't, in my opinion, compete with. So we take advantage of that. Like, when we're writing our issues, you know, we could write an issue that says, hey, when we click this button, it sends an email. Which you know, is accurate, but, you know, like, we'll always tie our issues, or we try to always tie our issues back to the human impact. So contributors know who they're helping and how they're helping. So, you know, when we click this button, it sends an email to remind a family to come, you know, pick up their diaper supplies, You know, so they're able to get to work that week or be able to work that week. Maybe that's a little contrived, but we're always trying to, right, like highlight the human benefit. And the other side of that is, you know, we try and facilitate